panoply, panorama, panpipe, pansy, aha, pansexual, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope, only on 3CR 855am digital and 3cr.org.au.
3CR 855 AM, 3CR digital, 3CR.org.au, 3CR on demand, Out of the Pan with Sally, first broadcasting noon through one every Sunday afternoon. Thanks for your company. 3CR broadcasts from the lands of the Kulin Nations at the overlap of the contested lands of the Wurundjeri and Bunurong peoples, and we pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello to any Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander and First Nations people tuning in today. And all the lands were stolen and never ceded. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I'm Sally Goldner. I proudly use the pronouns she and her. And I'm your host for this hour of Out of the Pan, a show covering, as I like to say, pansexual issues, knowing no boundaries of sex, gender, sex characteristics or genre. And there's lots of ways to get in touch with the show, and you'll want to do so because I've got two great guests on the show today who I'll mention and introduce very shortly. To get in touch with the show, outofthepan855@gmail.com, SMS 61456 751215, Twitter Mastodon Blue Sky, and Instagram at Sal Gold Said So, Facebook Sally Goldner, and Out of the Pan 3CR 855 AM Melbourne. Postal address, PO Box 1277, Collingwood 3066, because we'll actually be talking about things today when we didn't have any of those other means of technology, so the postal address will be relevant. And any opinions I express on the show are my own. Thanks to the crew from Out of the Blue, diving deep for the marine news, as they do every Sunday morning from 11:30 till noon. And don't think there'll be any content notes, but if they come up, we'll mention the numbers as needed. At around 12:30, I'll be talking to Jono Butler about mapping queer histories, particularly in Hobson's Bay, which I'm curious about. But also someone who's been very, very much a part of queer history and Australian writing history is my guest on the line now. And it is my absolute pleasure to welcome to 3CR Dennis Altman. Dennis, welcome to the 3CR airwaves.
Hi, Sally. Lovely to be on air with you.
It is good to be to have you here. You know, you're no stranger to the 3CR airwaves, and well, no stranger to queer history. You've put it all together in a compilation or collection called "Writing My World: Essays from the Past Half Century." Was there a particular sort of moment where you thought I might pull together a compilation of some of these essays? Was there a sort of light bulb moment that made you say, "I want to put it all together"?
I think there was, and it goes back to last year when my first book, Homosexual Oppression and Liberation, was retranslated and republished in Italy. And I did a number of talks in Italy, and there was this wonderful sense of recognizing that there are now several generations of queer people for whom my memories are their history. Mm. And I've, of course, written quite a lot over the years tracking queer and HIV histories, but there's something about putting together smaller pieces that capture particular moments. And so I think it was very much, and I mean, I can go back to a discussion in a cafe in Bologna, which is, I think, when I thought, oh, you know, maybe I should do this. And then early this year, I spoke to the head of publishing at Monash, and luckily Monash University Press liked the idea, and so that's how it happened.
Yeah, you've hit right away there on a good point. You know, sort of, it's an interesting one. I mean, I think we need to be aware of the issues that have dominated, have been any part of our queer history. But it's also, I heard the opinion expressed recently that do we want to tell stories about that it was tough or things like that, you know, where we face stigma or it was harder to come out because we didn't have internet, because why do young people today need to hear that? I'd be interested in your sort of thoughts on that sort of comment.
Look, I think everybody wants a sense of being embroiled or rooted in the history of their community. And what is distinctive about a queer community, as distinct from ethnic or religious communities, is that we don't have the traditions and the memories handed down through our biological families. And therefore, there is, I think, a particular reason for queer people to keep in touch with memories that, of course, we lose every decade. It's also, I think, very important because an effective activist politics has to know what went on in the past. You can't suddenly launch into a campaign with no awareness of what the preconditions were, how attitudes have changed. But I think, as I say, for me, the real point, and I don't think I thought of writing my world as only doing queer history. I mean, it does cover a number of other topics. And one of the things that it's really talking about in all sorts of ways is we all have a multiplicity of identities. And that's something that comes through quite strongly, I found, when I was both writing the new introduction and the new conclusion to the book, and something that I think is really important for us to come to terms with.
Yeah, look, absolutely so. I mean, I'm just looking, you know, even here, looking at the contents where you know, sort of separated things into about four or five sections. The Golden Age of Liberation, AIDS and Queer Identities on Writing Itself. I've added in the itself. The Personal is Political. And then you've got the foreword and afterward. I mean, that, you know, sort of in its way shows, you know, sort of parts of yourself, that you're multifaceted, and absolutely so. I'm going to pick a chapter at random, or an essay at random, sorry. In Mumbai, the contradictions and delights of hybridity and pastiche. Tell us a little about that one, when you wrote it, and how it comes in today.
Because I like that piece. Look, a few years ago, I was invited to speak at the Queer Film Festival in Mumbai, which is the biggest queer film festival, maybe the biggest queer film festival, certainly in India, but possibly in Asia. I'm not sure. It's been going for a number of years, and they had an Australian theme that year. Yeah. And it was quite extraordinary being caught up in the middle of queer politics and queer culture in what is, after all, the film capital of India, Mumbai, and seeing how there's this fascinating interchange between the global and the local. And I tell the story that I think sums it all up, of the mother who took out an ad, because in Indian newspapers, parents actually advertise for potential spouses for their children. And this very brave mother took out an ad seeking a husband for her gay son. And I thought that was such a wonderful example of where something that is both seems Western and yet takes on a very specific Indian shape is visible.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that is a beautiful thing. I even just, you know, hearing a little about it now, it's just like, you know, my heart warmed just even hearing that. So, yeah, this is why we need these writings and need them revisited in a book like Writing My World. Absolutely.
Well, also, I should say, it was important to me to have a lot of non-Australian material, because I've done a lot. I've been very lucky. I've had a lot of international exposure to through both queer and HIV politics. And so I wanted to include, so there's discussion of a number of places around the world at different periods. And that for me was very much part of what I wanted to have as central to the book.
Well, you know, you certainly, you know, sort of a number of places, but also looking at, there's one here that just has, you know, I'm going spontaneously live at random, as we agreed, on your writing section. Reading Agatha Christie, I mean, there's the settings of, you know, a lot of Agatha Christie, of course, is set in early 20th century sort of UK type of stuff. But, how does Agatha Christie come into this one for you?
Now, there is actually a specific queer historical moment. You would probably remember, Sally, the lesbian poet Dorothy Porter.
Indeed.
And Dot and I were good friends, and we bonded over the fact we both read Agatha Christie. And I'm very proud of the fact that I became the first man ever to speak at a Sisters in Crime event when Dot and I did an event called Queering Agatha. And after Dorothy died, I wrote this piece essentially in her memory. What I'm fascinated by is that Agatha Christie was a nasty, racist, anti-Semitic, right-wing Englishwoman who is still read by large numbers of people who share none of her politics but love her ability to invent the most ingenious murder stories. And so it was trying to work through that conundrum, I guess, that Dot and I got involved in it. And as I say, the piece on Agatha Christie was written essentially in memory of Dorothy.
Yeah, look, there's a few points in there. I mean, yeah, first and foremost, what an amazing writer Dorothy was. But, I mean, I admit I didn't really think about that about Agatha Christie until now. But, I mean, even when we look at, I'm thinking of, I haven't read all of the Agatha Christie books by any means, but even the ones that I do remember, there certainly was some racism expressed, even if it was in a, we'll say, a more third person way, but was it her views coming through? And it's an interesting one because, you know, there's no doubt of her great writing, but then we get into this thing where we look at it now with the perceptions we have. And I mean, the other one that came back to me, and I almost feel, well, I'll say this carefully. I mean, you look at the books, you know, that so many people grew up with by Enid Blyton, and we look at them now and think how racist and classist and goodness knows what else they are, and fair enough. But how do we reconcile that both from a general literature point of view and, look, this is a queer program, so I'll say a queer point of view when we look back at things and see these things, or perhaps, and other things like, okay, something written 50 years ago wouldn't use the words we might want to use today. What are your thoughts on that? Can we reconcile it? If so, how? Should we try? Et cetera, et cetera.
I think we have to read things, understanding the time in which they're written. Having said that, I think we don't suspend our judgment. And the reason I'm so critical of Christie is that her anti-Semitism continued even after World War II. Now, that is absolutely extraordinary, that after the Holocaust, she still could make throwaway lines about Jews. But I think you've touched on something that is really difficult, because most of what is regarded as, you know, as classic literature will, of course, contain a great deal that to a contemporary audience seems offensive. Often, and because we're a queer program, often there will, of course, be extraordinarily homophobic and transphobic comments, and we're usually portrayed either as villains or as figures to laugh at. So it is, I think, something that we need to struggle with. I don't believe that the answer is to censor or to stop reading or to stop watching the movies. I think the answer is to read and to watch and to think, but also to challenge, so that as readers, we have to bring our own understandings to whatever it is we're reading. But at the same time, we have to try and imagine the world in which those authors were living. And then I think it becomes an interesting question of, if we know that something was written, say, in 1936, right, how far can we judge them by contemporary standards? And I think, as you say, that is an ongoing issue, and it's one that I know causes a great deal of pain for a lot of people, but I think it's really important to stick with it, not just to say, oh, forget it, I'm not going to read it because they're racist, they're classist, they're sexist. If we do that, does that mean we have to stop seeing Shakespeare, it's full of attitudes that we would find personally today quite reprehensible?
Yeah, look, very, very true. And of course, it applies to music as well. I mean, there was a discussion, I'll keep it neutral, a few years ago now, the classic Lou Reed song, Walk on the Wild Side. And some people are saying, oh, we shouldn't play it because of the words. And I will say, possible content note for some listeners, you know, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, quote, and then he was a she. And some people have found that, you know, disrespectful to trans, you know, is it past gendering, so to speak? But, I mean, look at what that song did. It gave at least some sense of connection to gender history for some people, and, you know, does tell the story of trans, and, you know, and it's grounded in truth of trans people, what we would now call trans people, in that scene. So it's that sort of debate that I think comes into it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually, I mean, I'm fascinated, Sally, because I would have thought that that was actually a quite positive statement by Lou Reed. I mean, I agree. If somebody came out with that song in 2025, it would be rather different. But I think for its time, it was actually trying to reach out to explain something that for most people was alien and threatening.
Yeah, no, absolutely so. You know, there's so many chapters in this book. There's so much to cover. I mean, I'm just looking again. I wish I'd had time to read it fully. Life gets in the way of doing the things that I love, like 3CR, as much as I would like. But you cover musical, theatre and politics. One from the personal and the political. I'm actually going to take a deep breath here and talk about Life After Anthony, if that's okay to ask about that one.
Yeah. I had a partner for 22 years who died of lung cancer 12 years ago. And, you know, I'm a writer. I promise you, I'm not getting away from your question, Sally, sure. But there is another piece that I just want to mention because it actually is relevant. One of the essays in the collection is called I Think Therapy is Good for Other People. And in it, I explain that for me, the experience of therapy hasn't actually been all that great because for me, what is most effective is to write. And so writing about my experience of losing a life partner was for me therapeutic in a very real way. And it was actually, it includes this quite remarkable moment when shortly after Anthony died, two or three days probably after he died, there was a knock on the door and there were two young Mormon missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And my instinct when they show up is to say, oh, fuck off, but I didn't. I said, you know, my partner has just died. They thought I was referring to a business partner. And I can't, I mean, you know, it's these things that are so, I think they're so wonderful when you capture them. And there are things, as I said before, that's why I think one does republish shorter pieces, because they capture that moment. If I today were to write about how I felt in the week after Anthony's death, I wouldn't remember the detail. It's very, very hard to remember the emotions you feel in the wake of someone's death, because over time, of course, you process those emotions and grief turns into something else. It turns into memory. But I think that certainly I've always felt that if you write, you need to be pretty upfront about the position from which you are coming. And what I used to do in supervising graduate students, I would just say to them, if you're going to write a thesis, the first thing you need to do is to explain why it is that this is the subject you want to spend 2 or 3 years of your life working on, and how does that relate to your own personal experience of life. And that may not even end up in a graduate thesis, but I think it's a really important part of the writing process.
Indeed, yeah. Personal light bulb moment as you were talking there. We might have to catch up about something else off here. But
There's some things that are better talked about off air, that's true.
Yeah, definitely. The last particular essay before you get to the afterword acknowledgements, etc., is one that's just caught my eye, and is The Spectre of Tribalism. Let's just quickly mention that one. Sort of what's that one about?
Yeah. Look, there are two essays that are very much related to the fact that I am a totally secular Jew who has no sense of allegiance to Israel. And I've been, over the last couple of years, very involved with the Jewish Council, which is a group of Jews who support Palestinian rights, mm-hmm. And who were, in a sense, caught between the mainstream Jewish community and some people on the left who tend to confuse hostility to Israel with anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
What I've found most extraordinary is you're referring to an essay I wrote a couple of years ago, but there's an earlier essay, and I can't remember exactly which one, in which I talk about being Jewish, and I wrote it in about 2010. And what I found extraordinary was that it was equally relevant in the contemporary world. And as I think I said, identity was very important. I've made the point, I think, in the conclusion, that over the last couple of years, my Jewish identity has probably been much more important than my gay identity, in the sense that it has been a much more contested arena than being gay. And I think that's an experience that a number of us will feel over a lifetime, that, you know, one part of your identity is crucial in certain environments. There are other environments in which suddenly something else becomes the most important and the part where you feel most vulnerable.
Very, very true. That's two things to catch up on. I think the one you might be referring to is Escaping the Tribe, that one. Yeah,
that's the one, yes. Yeah. And it begins with talking about my mother, who ended her life in a Jewish retirement home and found that quite difficult.
Yeah. There's one last question I wanted to ask generally before I let you get back to your Sunday, and that is that, you know, we are in... I personally think we're in some strange times in the world in terms of principle, and we're also in, which is related, tough times for LGBTIQA+ communities, particularly trans. In light of this book, what sort of thoughts would you have, and how we might, you know, sort of, well, stem what we would perceive as some of the, as you know, to turn these issues around and get to what I think was a better place that we had in terms of truth and ethics generally, and also in terms of the, you know, sort of what yeah. appears to be the attitudes to the communities of relevance to Out of the Pan.
Look, I totally agree with you. I think the world is becoming obviously nastier in all sorts of ways, and the obsession with trans people, the deliberate victimization of trans people that is coming from the very top of places like the American administration is, I think, quite scary. I am not that pessimistic about the local situation. I think we in Australia seem to have done better than most other countries in stemming some of this. Mm. But, of course, you are right. It is something that demands, I think, constant attention and a willingness to talk through with people. I think what is important is to understand that not everybody who has a question is necessarily hostile.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this struck me during the marriage debate, when anybody who questioned the idea of same-sex marriage was immediately branded as homophobic.
Mm.
Well, in fact, they were not necessarily homophobic. They were people who'd grown up with particular views of marriage, and if you started talking to them about it, they very often would come around to understanding a difference. And I think those conversations today around gender, and specifically around the remarkable bravery and emergence of a strong trans movement, are absolutely essential. So again, I go back, I don't want to waste time yelling at J.K. Rowling. I mean, J.K. Rowling has gone over the top.
Yep.
Let's ignore the woman. I think what we need to do, and particularly this needs to happen among teenagers, it needs to be happening in the schools, and there needs to be guidance, I think, from trans people to those of us who are not, as to the best ways of answering people's often, I think, quite legitimate concerns, and recognizing that encouraging people to ask questions is much better than just trying to shut them up.
Yep. Dennis, I'll have to leave it there. Look, I honestly want to say, it's been a joy chatting with you. I'm going to say quite genuinely, you are a Pacific ocean of wisdom and experience, and I think it is great that we have this collection, Writing My World. In the inevitable question, is it available at all good bookstores and elsewhere?
Well, I hope it is. It's certainly, however, it's certainly available at Hares and Hyenas, at Readings, and most of the big chains. So people have no excuse not to rush out, Sally, and buy it.
Well, absolutely. Well, you listed them probably in a reasonable order there, yes. Hello to Roland and Fab Peeps down at Hares and Hyenas. And I think I'll leave the interview with the quote from the back cover from Miriam Margoyle's, his wise, naughty, troubled insistence on being part of the world and making it better is more relevant than ever. That's a nice way to leave it. Dennis, thank you for your time. Safe and happy season.
Thank you, Sally.
And somehow, before I cut the Zoom, we'll have to find a way to connect on talk about a couple of things.
Okay. Thanks.
See you later. Bye.
Ciao.
Dennis Altman, I would honestly say an Australian treasure in so many ways, literary and queer. All right, let's have the proverbial breather, and I'll get Jono Butler into the studio. And in the meantime, one that will link our two guests together perfectly today, the track that wanted to play at the start, now let's hope it will. Here is Shirley Bassey and the Propellerheads. It's just another little bit of history repeating. 3CR 855 AM, 3CR digital, 3cr.org.au, 3CR on demand, Out of the Pan with Sally.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating. woman, man, girl and boy, feel the pain, feel the joy, and sidestep the little bits of history repeating.
Pan thanks Go Kindly for their sponsorship of this program. Go Kindly creates high-quality, locally made bedding, donating 50% of profits to support women and gender diverse people experiencing housing stress. Check out gokindly.com.au and take their pillow quiz.
Redline, the new show from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union.
So put down that job plan and listen to us.
6 p.m. every Monday night on 3CR Community Radio.
Choose to use your voice print to access your account when you call us.
This makes it... 3CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3CR.org.au. 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally. First broadcasting, noon through one, every Sunday afternoon. We just heard from Shirley Bassey and the Propeller Heads. Another little bit of history repeating, which seemed highly appropriate to link our two guests today. And that wasn't the track that I'd planned to play at that spot, but it all worked out. We opened up today with Ice House from the Sidewalk album and This Time. It is now this time to talk more about history, and to do so in the studio is my guest, who's got an event on during the midsummer season, and that is Jonathan Butler, who's going to talk about mapping queer histories, but also in a particular area. Jonathan, welcome to the 3CR studios.
Thank you so much for having me, Sally, and I love a good community radio crossover. I'm on Queer View Mirror on Triple R. So it's nice to be in the 3CR studios for once.
Absolutely, yes. And I'm just going to ask, Sam and Jem still rolling along with you? Or is
that Yep. And Hamish as well, and Priya. There's a few of us that we share. We fortnightly, roughly.
Rotate, so
that's
to speak.
Yeah.
A bit like, dare I say, the rotation, dare I say, rotations coming up at 2 o'clock on 3CR. And that was a blatant, another Sally segue moment. And could I ask, if it's okay to ask, which pronouns you use, if any?
He, him.
He, him. Jono, you've got an event coming up now, January 29th?
I do, yes.
And about mapping queer histories, but it's specifically to do with Hobson's Bay.
That's it. The wonderful people over at Hobson's Bay Libraries. It's part of Midsummer West Side. So obviously we all know and love Midsummer, but a few of the councils over in the West are putting on a few specific events for their sort of council. But yeah, this event has been organised by the absolutely amazing Madeleine Migley, who's the community engagement librarian for local history over at Hobson's Bay. And we were chatting, and so Hobson's Bay is Altona, Williamstown, mm-hmm. Newport, Laverton and Seabrook. And, you know, as with all queer history, we do like finding our little enclaves. And a lot of queer history does centre on certain enclaves. In Victoria, you're going to find a lot in Footscray. You're going to find a lot in St Kilda. You're going to find a little bit in Carlton. But there's not a heap in the Hobsons Bay. So we thought, let's go to the community and get a bit more queer history out of the community.
This look, you... telepathy. Anyone would think this interview was premeditated like professional wrestling. There it is at 12:41, 12:42. That's the obligatory professional wrestling reference out of the way for those who are having their benign non-gambling bets at home on when it would happen. But, you know, yeah, we think of areas like Fitzroy and yours proudly was proudly a part of the Queerways Project, which mapped history in this area. And we think of, say, St Kilda and Paran and all that sort of thing, Collingwood, where we've got, where we have venues. But I was going to ask you about that. I mean, I'll say on the surface, and I'll use that big caveat, we might not think of it in an area like Hobson's Bay. So the question is, how do you start digging in the first place? You know, it's sort of like, you know, do you just, it's like, you know, digging for buried treasure. You know, you don't really have an X that marks the spot, but you have to sort of start somewhere.
I think there's two answers to that. The first one is we are very fortunate to have resources like the Australian Queer Archives.
You hear?
And all the people involved. And in preparation, I've been tapping lots of friends on the shoulders being like, what have you got? And there is a lot of amazing queer history. Like, I think the headline would be Tony Briffa, who was the world's first known intersex mayor and public office holder in 2009, and that was Hobson's Bay. So that's very exciting. And all way back, are you familiar with Captain Moonlight?
I know of the name, the Bush Ranger.
The gay Bush Ranger. Yeah, so sort of like in the Ned Kelly era, but Captain Moonlight was queer. And there's a very exciting tale of Captain Moonlight trying to rescue one of his comrades from a Williamstown jail, basically.
Oh.
So, you know, if you do look into the formal history, you can find things. But the whole point of this event is to really tap into the community, because the community have these stories. And the thing that's so amazing about what we're actually going to do during the workshop is we're going to use some digital interactive maps called Queerways. So people can actually go on and log their queer histories that either they experience, their family members, or just things that they've been gathering over the decades.
Ah, sensational. This is what I wanted to ask. So, you know, you'll be able to tap into the grassroots and, well, that's how, you know, it won't be one X marking the spot. We'll have all sorts of X's and Y's and Z's and non-binary letters, because we'll, you know, sort of metaphorically dig up that buried queer treasure from everywhere.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, this is an excellent concept. And, of course, you know, it's, you know, they're, you've definitely answered the question, because, as I say, this was just sort of playing around in my mind, how are we going to do this? So,
and I believe you've been involved with Queerways. You narrated a video back in the day. Yeah, it's a great project. For those who don't know, there are two queer artists, Luciano and George Keats, who they worked with the Australian Queer Archives, and they've been doing it for a few years now. But they basically go to lots of communities across Victoria and extract these stories. And the really great thing about it is, you know, there is formal queer history there as well, but one great thing is there's these really touching, beautiful stories of people who thought that they were alone, and but they found connection and community, you know, whether it's a local beach, or whether it's, you know, that at school they, you know, met the first queer person and shared a kiss or something. So, you know, it's such a great resource for those really beautiful, touching stories, as well as, you know, some more formal queer history that you find elsewhere.
That's a really good point that, you know, we lose, and it actually we sort of perhaps might lose sight of that, you know, that first queer event you went to is, you know, important for yourself in that way. So that's a great way of getting into the local stuff. And I mean, it gets, you know, my mind just had a quick neurodivergent wander to things, you know, that may have been missed, such as the Centennial Hotel in Kensington, which doesn't come into this area, but those sorts of things that mean things to people and give that sense of community connection, visibility that we definitely need. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and I guess that's the tricky thing with queer history. For a lot of the past, we have been illegal. So a lot of people do things in secret. So it can be quite hard to extract these. And sometimes, you know, you might have a letter from an auntie or an uncle or someone else, or you might have heard a story, or, you know, I think this is another thing that we really focus on, and doing queer history is complicated, and you do have to sort of take very seriously these little scraps that you can get, but they are so precious and we really hold on to them and preserve them where we can.
Yep. To use a word, well, it's not quite the same, but I recently heard the word, it's the opposite of triggers, where we have glimmers, where we have good stuff. Well, it's sort of these, I'll adapt it to say, the glimmers of queer history that we need. Well, we need glimmer and glitter as much as we can at any time, so we'll take it, yeah.
But there is also some really great, another example I'll give you is, have you heard of the infamous beat map before?
No.
So back in the 1970s, there was a beat map. So someone had gone to the effort of, so a beat, for those who don't know, although I imagine many probably do, it's places in public where queer members of the community can gather to sex, meet each other. But someone in the 70s had mapped lots of different spots in Melbourne where there are beats, and there was one in the Laverton Air Force base as well. So, and this is back in the 70s, so that's a very, and they usually had really great names. Like there was one in a cemetery that was called Stiffies, because or the Flower Pot, or all those like cheesy camp great names. But yeah, so there is material evidence of queer history. We definitely do find it if we look. But another thing I really love about people who do queer history, like Dennis and lots of different people across Australia, is that they know that we have to do it. You know, we might think of history as that thing that exists, but actually it's actually the thing that we've got to find, collate and tell. It's, we're involved with it. So I think that's what I'm really excited about with this workshop, is that we can all kind of get involved and contribute to our queer stories.
Yeah, no, I really like the way you frame this, that this, your proverbial you know, sort of grassroots queer citizen who's thinking, oh, how might this be relevant to me, would then be able to find a way that it would be relevant. I mean, it could be, first queer kiss behind the sheds at school or exactly. Something, yeah. That sort of thing. So there's going to be plenty of them. And of course, we've done some queer history in Yarra and a few other areas, and now you're out to Hobson's Bay, but there are 79 local government areas in Victoria.
Yeah, I know. There's lots and lots and lots of history, exactly. But no, I'm really excited to get out to Hobson's Bay, and I know that there is lots of stories out there, but maybe people might not know what's the best way to capture it, or they might not think it's significant. One thing that we often come across is that people think that it isn't significant because of the place, you know, oh, it's just a corner of a street or whatever, but actually the emotional significance is there. So that's what we're also interested in, you know, to capture and make sure that other people can read about it and learn a bit about their local, you know, where they're spending day in, day out, has a really long queer history as well as a traditional history.
Yeah. Oh, look, absolutely. So, I mean, it weaves it in, and yet it makes it so more real and tangible, I think, totally, for people, which is cool.
I think queer people just love maps as well. I think there's something about, you know, there's lots of maps in queer history. And so, you know, I think it's a nice little exercise to kind of be able to poke around. I'd really recommend anyone listening to jump onto the Queer Ways website. There is a map for most, there's a lot of different areas across Victoria, and you can sort of look at the pins and read the stories, and you can filter it by, you know, different categories. And yeah, it's a really fun thing to do.
Definitely, definitely. And, neurodivergent thought came and went there, but,
no worries.
I think it is just so good that we have this history that is being made. So, and this will encourage people, as I say, to, you know, just, you know, sort of think that this is their event. So to find out the specific details of how you go about it, what you need to do, you know, sort of when, where, who, what, how, as we say, is that event on, to be precise.
So the event's called Mapping LGBTQIA Plus History with Jonathan Butler. If you Google it, it should come up. But yeah, it's with Hobson's Bay Libraries, and we're specifically going to be at the Newport Community Hub on January 29 from 6 p.m. to 7:15. I'm going to be talking a little bit about, you know, different ways to think about queer history and give some examples of different maps in queer history. And it's also going to be a bit interactive. So Madeline, who, as I mentioned before, is the community engagement librarian there, local history, she'll be helping community members input their stories into Queerways if they want to. But it's also just a really great time to connect during midsummer. And, you know, what a great place to meet your local queer community than the library.
Well, absolutely. That's what libraries are there for. They are a great place of sense of community on so many levels. So who knows? You could create more queer history at the library, and there could be another queer kiss behind the library or something.
There'll be a new pin on the Queerways map about this event, maybe. That'd be good.
I like it.
It's meta. It works.
All right, then. I'm just going to do a couple of quick messages, and then I've got to come back and tell our listeners what is going on this afternoon, and then we'll come back and finish our chat with Jono Butler in just a second. 3CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally.
Consumer law touches on many aspects of what we do every day. Consumer Action Law Centre has lawyers, financial counsellors and policy experts who specialise in issues such as unfair contract terms and deceptive or dodgy business practices like excessive pricing or irresponsible lending. Consumer Action Law Centre provides free legal information and advice and pursues litigation on behalf of consumers experiencing disadvantage across Victoria. Consumer Action Law Centre currently focuses on getting justice for people who have been sold lemon cars, ripped off by insurance companies, scammed and denied help from their bank, or refused hardship concessions from telecommunications and energy companies. Find out how Consumer Action Law Centre can help you at consumeraction.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
That is us on 3CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au and 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally. Coming to our afternoon lineup after Out of the Pan finishes in around 6.5 minutes, if you are listening live, that is. If you are not, you'll need to look at things like On Demand and our podcasts. But Freedom of Species, welcome to Savannah, a new Freedom of Species team member, along with Elise, and they'll be discussing their dream vegan menus. So that's definitely the case. Now, I remember one of my sister's early partners many years ago, they were sort of the only place you seemed to be able to go was the Green Man in Carlton, and now there's vegan and gluten-free type options everywhere, so there'll be plenty to dream about there. 2 o'clock rotations, 3 o'clock Queering the Air with Madison, Oscar and crew, and 4 till 6 Salaam Radio Show. So that's a great afternoon of listening to keep you company, whatever you are doing. So back to wrap up the conversation quickly with Jonathan. I think we've got it covered, but I just want to be sure anything else that came to mind about mapping queer histories in Hobson's Bay and anywhere for that matter.
I think, maybe if you grew up there or knew someone who, so Hobson's Bay is Altona, Williamstown, Newport, Laverton or Seabrook. Come along. It's on the 29th of January at 6 p.m. just for an hour and 15 minutes. But yeah, spend the time having a think. We love to hear stories about queer-owned cafes and restaurants. Another thing I've come across is, I don't know if you've heard of the Elaine Barry Project.
I have indeed, yes.
Competitor to Seahorse, but they had a PO box in Altona. So we're kind of digging into if there's a bit of Altona queer history there with, more of trans history with the New Scene International Journal. Anyway, we want you to kind of dig into the archive, have a look, and then come along and share it with everyone. We would love to hear it. If not, hear some stories.
Absolutely so. And just before I go, I forgot to mention that the fabulous Wombat messaged in saying Wombat loved the Shirley Bassey and the Propellerheads history repeating. Yep, absolutely so. Jono, thank you for dropping into 3CR today and talking about an event that is part of the Midsummer Program. Yep. Great to see so many local governments getting involved, and of course over in Hobson's Bay, hi to Tony and Manya over there. All the best to them and every LGBTIQA+ person and ally in Hobson's Bay. Take it out today. on Out of the Pan with a track from Tanya Bauer from, oh gosh, how many years ago? Somewhere early 90s? 1989. That's very early 90s. A track from her Heaven and Earth album, and it is the title track, Heaven and Earth. Thanks to Dennis Altman as well. Thanks to Jono. Thanks for tuning in to Out of the Pan. I'm Sally Goldner. Catch you next week.
Been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.